Imagine driving through Ann Arbor, glancing over at the car next to you, only to realize that driver does not have his or her hands anywhere near the steering wheel, and yet the car is moving along in traffic just fine. That could happen in just a few short years. The University of Michigan has announced plans to bring a fleet of networked driverless cars to Ann Arbor by 2021. Here to talk about what that would look like in the streets of Ann Arbor and what it would mean to drivers everywhere is the director of the University of Michigan Transportation Research Institute, Peter Swetman. Welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
So let's start by examining just what we're talking about when we use that term driverless cars. Would it perhaps be more accurate to call them self-driving cars? Because there is someone sitting there, right?
Yes. So there's a whole range of things that are going to happen. So we're starting to see some level of automation in vehicles today. And in fact, the US DOT has been kind enough to identify four different levels of automation going forward. So we tend to call them automated vehicles because it covers the whole range. But eventually you get to something that's literally driverless. But there are various stages going through where, you know, we take our hands off the wheel, we take our feet off the pedals, and we take our eyes off the road. So those three elements are pretty important stages as we move through to, as you described it, the driverless vehicle.
Now, I'm interested as far as how far along is the technology?
Well, technology is pretty good. I mean, we still have challenges, and one of the challenges is the cost of the technology. So you've probably heard about vehicles that are so-called autonomous vehicles that have enough sensors on them in order to operate without reference to any other form of communication to the vehicle or any other form of technology. So that's a pretty high bar, and at the moment is pretty cost prohibitive. What we're really interested in is the convergence between connected vehicles, and we have nearly 3,000 of those now operating in Ann Arbor, convergence of that connectivity with increasing amounts of automation. And the connectivity makes that task easier. It makes it safer, and it also reduces the cost, because the actual connectivity, what that really represents, is a very powerful and relatively low-cost additional sensor for the vehicle. So we think that the connectivity is a key ingredient in this as we move forward and we get to more automated vehicles.
Peter, you mentioned the safety pilot project with these some 3,000 connected vehicles in the Ann Arbor area. What does it look like on a day-to-day basis, and what have you learned from this project so far?
Well, it's been tremendously successful because we've been able to deploy, as I said, nearly 3,000 vehicles, cars, trucks, buses, and motorcycles that can talk to each other. So that means that what we call situation awareness, that is, what is the real situation of proximity of vehicles, and in particular, risks arising that might lead to a collision. And so the vehicles are communicating in such a way that that is being monitored. And ultimately, you know, we need some redundancy in the system as well to be totally reliable, because as you can imagine, when we finally get to a driverless vehicle, we need to have great confidence in the way that technology is going to perform and behave and the reliability of it.
You know, you touched on something that, as I thought about this, popped into my mind over and over again, and that is what it's going to take to train drivers to let go, if you will, and let your car do the driving, because clearly you've got this self-driving car dealing with red lights and stops at intersections, so I am literally staking my life on that piece of technology working perfectly every time.
Well, exactly. And as we go through the process, we're going to need the driver to come back on duty every now and then. So there are going to be times when the lane markings just aren't there. They're worn out or they're covered in snow or whatever. There are going to be times as we go through this process that the driver's going to have to do something. So the driver's going to be there, and it's almost the opposite of the problem we have now. Right now, we're expecting the driver to do everything, and of course, drivers get distracted. So sometimes the driver can't be relied on to do everything they need to do. It's almost flipping that around so that the driver will be relieved of many tasks, but there are going to be times, critical times, when the attention of the driver has to be directed back to a particular task and a particular need. So that's a pretty important area for research, and it's something that we're very interested in at the university. It's really what we'd call a human factors problem, as to how you accurately attract the attention of the driver back to what they actually need to know. And many of the systems we've been working on the last five, six, 7 years really prepare us pretty well for those kind of situation, because we're increasingly giving drivers warnings about things. So, you know, we detect a risky situation and the driver gets a warning. So that's going to stand us in good stead as we go to these more automated vehicles.
I'm speaking with Peter Sweatman, who's the director of the University of Michigan Transportation Research Institute. And as we think about having these automated vehicles, Peter, I know we see that there can be benefits as far as controlling traffic flow, so fewer traffic jams, fewer accidents. And then talking about as the car takes over tasks, freeing us up to do what? What are we supposed to be doing while that car is doing most of the work?
Well, I think, strangely enough, I think culturally Americans are very attuned to using their time better. And so I think everyone can think of things they can be doing while they're sitting in their vehicle.
Seriously, like email and texting?
And some people are already doing it, right?
So, well, yeah, to the detriment of many.
Yeah, so that's a very unsafe behavior, of course. But with these more automated systems, then it's going to be possible to do things like that and quite safely. So, yeah, people will just generally be able to use their time a lot better while they're traveling in vehicles.
Wow. Well, we know that Google's got its driverless cars. They've already driven over 500,000 miles with no accidents, and Nissan and Tesla and Daimler AG are among those hoping to have self-driving vehicles available within the next year. So this is happening. This is not just, hey, let's see what we can do in a research setting.
Yeah, we're really coming to a tipping point where, industrially and from a commercial point of view, we need to make this successful. So it's not commercially successful at the moment, and that's going to be the true test, because we need to be able to get these systems out there on a very large scale to get the benefits. You know, you touched on the safety benefits, the fact that we still have over 32,000 fatalities every year in this country. So these kind of systems will make the biggest potential impact on that we've ever had the opportunity to do, and that's why we're very excited about it, but also the way traffic moves, so we don't have to stop and start so often. So many, many benefits are going to impact energy use. It's going to impact the environmental impact of vehicles. So one of the things that we're doing to really accelerate this process is at the University of Michigan, we're going to build a test facility, which is actually on the university campus, to actually test these vehicles safely, to test automated and connected vehicles off-road in a safe manner. So we're actually building what we call a fake downtown, so that we're actually putting up some pretty complex urban situations with pedestrians suddenly appearing between parked cars and all that kind of thing, to make sure that these automated systems are capable of dealing with those systems time and time again in a very reliable manner.
So, Peter, let's say it's 2021. The goal has been met. There is a fleet of self-driving cars, automated cars, ready to hit the road in Ann Arbor. So here we're going to have some cars with self-driving capabilities and then the rest of us who don't have that. So even if you're in your self-driving car with automatic braking, I can still run into you with my car. I mean, how will the haves and the have-nots be interfacing?
Well, I think that's an interesting question, but they definitely will interface. So we don't envisage that we're going to have special private lanes for these kinds of vehicles. So these automated vehicles will coexist with other vehicles. And, of course, some of the work being done here at the university already in the College of Engineering shows that we can have a mix of technology levels out there working together pretty successfully. So we don't need to have all automated vehicles in order to operate safely.
Well, it strikes me that we're kind of perhaps at the threshold of the same period in history when people were looking at that strange horseless carriage going down the road thinking, who would ever get behind the wheel of that automated thing when you could hitch up a team of horses and carry you? Who would do that? And we found out it did. It worked and it happened.
Yes, who knew we needed that? Who knew we actually wanted that kind of capability, that kind of technology? So sometimes the technology comes along and provides us with an opportunity that we've just got to take. But I must say that there's a lot more than the technology involved in this as far as we're concerned, because we need to come up with systems that are going to really work for users. So, for example, we think these new mobility machines will be automated and connected, but they'll probably be shared as well. So you'll be able to call up a mobility machine in Ann Arbor with your smartphone, and you get taken to where you want to go. You don't need to park it or anything like that. So the impact on parking, the need for parking in cities, will be substantial. So you can imagine the improvement to our downtown areas when we don't need so much parking. So there will be many, many additional benefits that people are going to like. And we're really working on something here that everyone in the community is going to benefit from, and the users are going to just love it. And that's our aim.
Peter Sweatman, the director of the University of Michigan Transportation Research Institute. Thanks for talking with us today. As always, it's a pleasure talking with you, Peter.
That's a pleasure. Thank you.